Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. Go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Get your free 31-page PDF. It's a study guide on the top 200 drugs. No-brainer to have, just simply an email. You'll get on our email list. We'll shoot you messages when we've got new podcasts out and new content available. So again, reallifepharmacology.com. Top 200 study guide. Go snag that for free. All right, the drug of the day today is salmeterol. Brand name of this medication is Cerevent. Note, it is also contained within the product of Advair, which is probably more commonly used, at least in my experience. So that's in combination with an inhaled corticosteroid and salmeterol there. So salmeterol is a long-acting beta-2 agonist. You'll see the acronym all the time about LABA therapy. So that's stands for, again, long-acting beta-2 agonist. And with that, it's an inhaled respiratory medication, dry powder, and it is used in the treatment of asthma and COPD. Now, I do want to caution you, the use in asthma. So this drug cannot be used as monotherapy, okay? Very, very important to remember that. And there's actually boxed warnings due to an increased risk of death when this drug, salmeterol, is used as monotherapy. Now, it obviously can be used in combination for the treatment of asthma when it is used with an inhaled corticosteroid. Okay, and if you remember the asthma guidelines, when we need a controller medication, we generally start, or we do always start with an inhaled corticosteroid taken on a daily basis if we're going to do maintenance therapy, and then we don't switch if, you know, we still need more coverage. We add on therapy from there. So generally inhaled corticosteroid, bump up the dose, and then if, you know, coverage symptoms haven't improved enough, then we're going to add LABA therapy like salmeterol here, for example. So again, cannot be used alone in the treatment of asthma. Now, COPD, that's a different story, okay? We can use LABA therapy in COPD as monotherapy. That's right in the guidelines, ABCD classification in the gold guidelines. It does mention LABA as a potential option. Now, in practice, I would say that I definitely see clinicians go more for LAMA therapy, so that's long-acting anti-muscarinic agents. And there's a few reasons for that, but you know, most of the guidelines indicate either are okay. But again, it depends upon the stage you're in and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, LABA therapy in some stages of COPD is acceptable. It is not acceptable as monotherapy ever in asthma. So very, very important, definitely to remember that for sure. Mechanistically, long-acting beta agonists do what their classification says they do. So an agonist, it stimulates beta-2 receptors. Beta-2, the easiest way to remember that, those receptors are found on the lungs, which you have two lungs. And what that does when those receptors are stimulated, or agonist action is done on those receptors, it causes smooth muscle relaxation, and that ultimately opens up the airway. Now, if you remember, beta-1 receptors, those are on the heart. So in the setting of higher dosages, it is possible that salmeterol could have some of those beta-1 type actions. But again, we're inhaling through the lung as well, so we don't have a ton of absorption either, systemic absorption, to get to the heart and have those actions too. So again, dosing definitely matters, and frequency of use, as well as other medications that we're using with it as well. So the adverse effect profile lumps into that. So if we do start potentially touching some of those beta-1 receptors and stimulate them, increased pulse, increased blood pressure. Those are certainly potential complications. And in practice, where I've seen the most issues with beta agonists is generally overuse. So patients who are maybe taking long-acting beta agonists on a regular basis, like salmeterol here, for example, and then maybe they're doing a bunch of albuterol as well, trying to help with acute relief of symptoms as well. And that combination maybe bumps up that pulse, bumps up that blood pressure a little bit. So again, not incredibly common to see it when patients are using, you know, the standard twice daily dosing with salmeterol. But it definitely is something to pay attention to, because you do see it on occasion. Other kind of wacky adverse effects I wanted to mention that you will see come up, or at least reported in the literature, elevation in blood sugar, as well as a drop in potassium. And I'll cover that a little bit more when we talk about drug interactions here coming up. Severe milk protein allergy. So if your patient has a severe milk protein allergy, it is recommended to avoid use of salmeterol in this dry powdered inhaler. It's because it contains lactose, and there's potential there for some reactivity. Pharmacokinetics, onset of action, which you can kind of guess. It's a long-acting beta agonist, and it cannot be used for acute relief of symptoms. So the onset of action is slow. So very, very important education point. I've seen mistakes from patients with this, thinking that they can use it as their rescue or relief inhaler when they're having symptoms. That onset of action is 30 minutes to 2 hours. So we cannot use this medication, salmeterol, for acute relief of asthma, and that's or COPD, okay? So very, very important patient education point that I think you definitely need to mention that to your patients and make sure they understand that one. Poor systemic absorption in general. So again, I don't go crazy worrying about adverse effects from standard dosing of salmeterol, but it is something to be aware of there. And then monitoring parameters, we're going to monitor respiratory status, FEV1, peak flow, other respiratory function tests possibly as well there. And then from the adverse effect profile monitoring, blood pressure and heart rate, you know, we're probably going to do that in general on most of these patients, but definitely something to pay attention to as we're starting it, or maybe adding medications, changing medications. And then potassium potentially, and blood sugar changes as well if your patient does have diabetes. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. We've got everything from NAPLEX content for students all the way up to study materials for those difficult pharmacist board certification exams like BCPS, geriatric exam, BCMTMS, and others. So definitely go check that out. Support the sponsor, meded101.com/store, STORE. If you're a nurse, physician, med student, PA, you name it, you deal with pharmacology, you deal with medications, you help patients, we've got a growing list of resources, Amazon books, Audible books, all those links can be found at meded101.com/store. All right, finishing up drug interactions. Now, when I think about drug interactions and salmeterol and most inhaled medications, I generally don't get terribly concerned, okay? Especially drugs that have low or pretty minimal absorption systemically. It's probably not crazy high on my radar list. However, I think it is obviously important to note it, and if a patient is showing clinical issues, clinical, you know, signs and symptoms and changes, that's definitely something we should investigate further and make sure that our drugs aren't having interactions and or causing some of these symptoms. So first one I think about is the blood pressure and pulse. So if either of those are elevated, I'm definitely going to look through that medication list and make sure that there aren't other drugs in addition potentially to salmeterol that are causing those issues. So, you know, kind of classic examples are some of the illicit drugs, the stimulants, you know, cocaine, that type of thing. But of course, we can have some of the ADHD medications as well, you know, that can raise blood pressure and cause some tachycardia potentially as well. So take a look, make sure you're paying attention to the whole medication list and what the patient is doing. Certainly high caffeine intake can be another factor there as well, adding on to the effects of salmeterol. So pay attention to those additive effects and what's going on with your patient clinically. Opposition, opposing effects, beta blockers, okay? Beta agonists, beta blockers, they go directly against each other. Now, hopefully, with beta blockers, we're using a cardioselective agent, so a beta 1 selective agent. If we aren't, if we're using a non-selective agent, maybe like propranolol for tremor, for example, there is a higher likelihood that that's going to kind of interfere and prevent or reduce the activity of salmeterol in the lungs. So definitely important to look out for that, in that understanding that beta blockers can potentially blunt the action of salmeterol. One other important point with that is dosing. So dosing absolutely matters. So even on our beta selective agents, our beta 1 selective agents, you've got to think about dosing. So if metoprolol's at 12.5 milligrams twice a day, that's, you know, really a quite low dose. Versus 100 milligrams twice a day, that's a little bit more, you know, moderate to high dose. So thinking about that, monitoring respiratory status, just paying attention to when those changes happen, really, really important to make sure we try to catch that and prevent issues from happening there. CYP3A4 inhibitors, they can raise concentrations. Inducers can lower concentrations. Again, I don't crazy worry about that in a drug that's pretty minimally absorbed systemically, but it is out there and has been reported that there's issues there. The blood sugars I wanted to mention again. So if you got a diabetes patient and, you know, we're opposing maybe some of the beneficial effects of the meds they're taking, because salmeterol has been associated with elevated blood sugars. Again, pretty rare, but should pay attention to it. And then finishing up, potassium. So hypokalemia can result on account of beta 2 agonist action. Again, at the doses we're giving, minimal systemic absorption, usually not an issue for most patients. However, if you got somebody that's borderline low, maybe they're on a thiazide and a loop diuretic, they've got risk factors for hypokalemia. And, you know, adding on that salmeterol might end up pushing them, you know, over the edge and a little bit further lower into where they're more into a troublesome region. So definitely pay attention. Again, not crazy common, but something to make sure you're aware of. All right, well, that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. I so appreciate those notes. It helps motivate me, keep me going, and make sure I try to deliver some great content to you guys and help you learn pharmacology better. So I appreciate all the kind words, kind notes. If you haven't taken the time to have done that, I would greatly appreciate it if you would. If you obviously enjoy and like the podcast, you've probably been listening to it for a while. So definitely appreciative to those of you who have done that. Go sign up, reallifepharmacology.com. Get that free top 200 study guide. Suggestions, recommendations on meds to cover, and so on and so forth. MedEducation101@gmail.com. Or you can track me down on LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. Also support the sponsor, MedEd101.com/store. Go snag an Amazon book, study materials, whatever. Your support there definitely helps keep this podcast free and available for all to benefit from. So I appreciate all of you who have taken the time to spend your hard-earned money to buy some of those resources and help support this podcast. So with that, I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your day.